Okay, Happy Valley City Council Work Session for June 18th, 2019 will come to order. Does anybody have any clarifications or anything on the meeting agenda? Nope?
Nope.
Okay, then we're into an information item. Mr. Tuck.
Thank you. As you know, our public safety levy needs to be voted on this November. So in anticipation of this, I asked Mr. Campbell to work with the Traffic and Public Safety Committee and create what we call a task force to evaluate basically our service levels, our call for service, our budget, everything. And there's a lot of data and a lot of factors in help determining what your service level desires are, and then ultimately what a levy rate to accompany that needs to be. So Mr. Campbell has a pretty long PowerPoint here to go through, but I think it would probably be best to just ask questions as we go along rather than wait to the end. So when you have a question, it's fresh in your mind. And then ultimately tonight, it would work pretty well if you had a recommendation for us to bring materials back to a council meeting for you to actually approve and refer a rate to the November ballot. If you need a little more time, then you know we can schedule it for the next work session too. But we're shooting for the end of July to get the materials adopted, and we need some time to put them all together.
Councilor Gray?
Yeah, and that was kind of my question, Jason, is what's the drop dead deadline that we need to register the rate?
We had it the last meeting in
July.
We need to get it registered with the elections office.
That's in actually August, right?
It's in August, and we need to have at least a week buffer to publish the title and things like that. So if it was beyond.
I think it was the end of August, and first meeting in August, we're canceling.
Exactly, for National Night Out. Yeah. So pump this up to end of July.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you, Mr. Tuck. Council, good evening. Thank you, first of all, for sitting through this very detailed PowerPoint presentation. I think to tee it off a little bit, to just kind of start with, we have been working with the Traffic Public Safety Committee since February. And then last meeting, last Thursday, we really kind of got down to brass tacks and discussion on what really should the police model look like for the next 5 years. And I think that it was a little bit difficult to navigate through, because I think in normal situations, I say normal, but when you have a police department that works underneath a city in a general budget, general fund budget, it's typically the way that a police department adds personnel is they come to the city council budget committee and they justify a position. And they justify that by crime rates per thousand per population, what type of crimes are coming into the community, what they're seeing, the response times, if they're increasing, staying the same, and just overall, are they able to keep staffing at an appropriate level or minimum staffing level in pace with officers taking vacation time, personal leave, FMLA, things like that. So with us, we have it's a little bit different. Well, it's a lot different. We have a rate that's a variable rate. So depending on how the economy's doing, that rate fluctuates. So we really tried to focus on, and I kept going back to this with the committee, is let's pick a police model first, and then let's figure out how we fit into that, what the rate was. I think at the end of the night, Mark B can chime in anytime here, because Mark B was there. At the end of the night, it was really about what, at $1.38, which scenario, there's three scenarios you'll see presented, are you comfortable with choosing? And they chose the middle ground, and we'll get to that. But I wanted to just kind of.
Can I do one clarification on your statement? We don't have a variable rate. We have a set rate of $1.38 per thousand. What is variable is the assessed value. So the revenue side of it is what is the most volatile or subject to any kind of increase or decrease. The costs can also be adjusted, and so that's and the way you do that is by increasing or decreasing personnel. So we have control over the cost factors, not much control over the revenue factor.
Go ahead. Council. Oh, Council President Sherman.
Do we have, I didn't realize that we have, within our contract, like the ability to reduce the number of sworn officers in Happy Valley at that point in time? Okay, okay.
Yes, the only thing our contract stipulates too is that if we give a notice to sheriff, he can't quickly absorb those personnel, we have to pay for them for a year.
Council Drake.
Yeah, and just a point of clarification, our assessed value goes up 3% every year. Right?
At a minimum.
At a minimum.
Our actual assessed value ranges from, Travis has the numbers, but I think the last few years have been ranging close to 9 to 10%.
Right, right, what I'm saying though is, the assessed value of the city goes up 3% every year, then the growth is the addition. So the growth is what's variable. But the assessed value, if there's no growth, goes up 3% a year.
Not necessarily, it doesn't have to. So the assessor actually sets the, percent, the AV increase, assessed value increase per year. Can't go over 3%.
Right.
But it can be less, and that's state law.
But the real variability.
Yeah, we don't call it the increase, we just call it the assessed value because it's all combined. It's not like we get a check for 3% and then a check for the increase, we get one check for.
Right, but I guess what I'm trying to say is if the, so if the growth continues, we do really good with our revenue, if the growth doesn't, if we saw during that kind of time that it, housing crashed, then we don't get that growth, we don't get the assessed value increase that we normally would expect.
Which may tie in justification whether or not we had a police officer or not, you know. And I think in 2007 and 2008, when we saw the crash happen, you would think the opposite would happen, where crime actually went down. That has part to do with a lot of the construction, a lot of the crimes were construction theft and things like that, happening, so that went down by virtue of that itself. But I'll get into this and feel free to ask questions at any time. Let me turn it on first, if that works better. Okay, so police staffing, there's no real national trend on how you determine police staffing. Those are the factors typically that you see, the economic conditions, which we're talking about extensively, political climate, the demographics, leadership goals, crime trends, calls for service, and community expectations. And all of those areas that we look at pretty in depth throughout this process. Police staffing, we did analyze historical staffing partners, community surveys, population growth, ratio of officers per to population, and workload. Funding is currently at $1.38, and that's per $1,000 assessed valuation. So this is the opportunity now for the next 5 years to look and see whether or not that level of funding is appropriate. Jumping right into what we did was we did scenarios, three scenarios based off of $1.38, which is what our current rate is. These scenarios dictate the revenues and expenditure line items. So if you look all the way to the bottom in the tax revenue, this is a high growth, low cost scenario, meaning the taxes that would come in, we estimate at 9%. The personnel, police personnel would be at 4%, and the M&S would be at 5%. Typically, in the past 5 years with the sheriff's office contract, that 4% and 5% for M&S, 4% for personnel is basically what we see. The contract does dictate that it can go all the way up to 8% and caps at 8%. So again, historically, we haven't seen that since the inception of this new contract since 2009. So with this scenario, we will be able to add approximately 12 officers in the next 5 year period of time. That would pretty much be doubling our police department as it sits today for officers.
Councilor Drake. Council President Sherman.
Sherman.
Just a clarification here. So in this scenario, we are fully staffing two officers a year, incorporating a 9% kind of growth bogey on a year-over-year basis. And then our ending fund balance, our contingency just kind of demonstrates that we're able to, in this scenario, we would be able to make that work.
Correct.
And I would assume that while we do dip down at the tail end of this period of time to a 20% contingency, even at if taxes don't grow to the same level, we would still have, I don't know the impact of a 1 or 2% reduction of that tax number, but I would assume that While contingency would be lower, we probably could still add the officers if we needed to in this scenario. Is that, okay, that's the takeaway, okay.
Counselor Drake.
How did you calculate the contingency in the future? I know what it is today, but how, what assumptions did you use?
It is, let's see. So it's the ending fund balance divided by total requirements for each year that's calculated. So that ending fund balance of 1.7 is um, 20% of the total requirement of the expenditures for that year.
Right, right. So each year you calculate your baseline funding. You increase it by 9%. You take out your increased cost for those. You apply that to the resource, and you say, what do we start with? Do we have more or less left in? We subtract it, and that's what you have for the next year. Just do the calculation over again. Increase by 9%. Cover police personnel and materials and service, and you just kind of do that calculation. Okay.
Counselor Drake.
So you're including though the 20% contingency operating. Contingency or operation reserves, I should say.
Well, that ending fund balance just represents the contingency. There's not a, because in the budget, if this was a budget for like year one, that ending fund balance would be the contingency number because you appropriate all of the resources. So that ending fund balance would be the contingency, and it would be whichever percentage is listed.
So there isn't a separate operating reserve.
Right.
The contingency is the reserve for the fund.
Okay, so, but that can vary. Because I thought we had established an operating reserve in the past, and the reason was if we lost an election, we'd still be able to provide police services.
There's no separate reserve. It's just the fund balance is essentially the reserve. That's what you haven't spent, and you're not depending on where you set contingency for the year, it'll feed into the ending fund balance.
So council does have a budget policy for contingency, and it's at 20%.
Okay, that's what I'm asking. So yes. That 20% is included in here, or is it just included in your overall contingency? In other words, if you spend this amount of dollars plus you budget a 20% contingency operating every year, is that 20% included in this, or you're just saying, here's all my expenses and whatever's left over is my reserve?
Correct, correct. That scenario. That's how we budget every single fund in the city.
So you don't budget specifically? Because I thought we had a line items in the budget. This is our reserve or operating reserve for replacement.
We
as an
do
example.
In the general fund and street fund and that sort of thing.
But you don't do it for the police.
Actually, fund. The only one that we have operations reserve, specific operation reserve, is general fund. No other fund has an operating reserve. It's just the contingency is your
residual.
Yeah, what's left over.
Because. I mean, what we've talked about in the past of what happens if the levy fails, we would have an operating reserve to cover us until the next election. And so we're not doing that anymore.
I thought that was conversation that was leading up to determining what the rate was going to be at the time. The last go-round when it failed, when
right.
That was some of the discussion of, well, let's try to build a operating reserve, but it obviously didn't work. We didn't have the additional funds because the levy failed. We had to go back to the original $1.38 amount to get that approved.
But we had a reserve money when the levy failed to continue to operate.
It's the contingency.
Only what, what's left over.
So, what's our annual police budget now, about 3 million and some change, 3.1, 3.2?
We budgeted 3.5, but then we reconcile now, instead of a year, we reconcile each month. So it's actually, the actual is different than.
Right, so my question is going to be, at about a 20% contingent at 1.7, 1.8, that's about a 6 month time horizon. If we kept everything intact at that current rate, and so would that buy, that buys us a half a year effectively?
At full staffing, yes.
At full staffing?
Yeah.
Okay. So you could cut staffing and last you longer if you needed to.
Okay. And some of that money is also used for emergency situations. So our agreement with the sheriff is he will respond and handle most every emergency unless it becomes a huge thing. Then we meet to discuss who's going to start paying for resources. So we keep some aside for that emergency that happens as well.
Okay.
Anybody clear here?
Well, yes.
Whether or not we agree on that approach, but
I just want to make sure everybody's clear on how we're doing it.
Yeah, I'm not agreeing or disagreeing with anything.
Right.
I'm just saying that I just wanted to clarify, these are the assumptions that are going into these numbers. That's what I was trying to do.
All right. Mr. Campbell?
We'll go to scenario two. This is a medium growth, medium cost, meaning taxes are going to go slightly down from our last scenario and expenditures go slightly up. This right here, this scenario here for 5 years would afford us 8 additional officers. And scenario three is low growth, high cost. We got the taxes down at 5%, and the expenditures 7 and M&S 6, which is almost the max of the contract.
Councilor Drake.
But with our growth rate, mm-hmm. has it ever fallen below 5% in the last 5 years?
No, not, and actually, I should pass these out. It lists the AV growth the last 5 years.
Oh, good. Okay. Thank you.
And then the second one is the Indian Fund balance the last 5 years.
So
the answer no.
So we're pretty safe in the assumption, even the mid-range assumption or the top assumption, because even if the economy were to slow, we'd still be within probably in that range.
Yeah.
Or can you make that assumption? Or, I mean, I'm not talking about a 9%, but even if it falls to 7% or somewhere in there, but it's not going to be falling below 5%.
I wouldn't think so. Even the last, if you go back to 2007, so that you've got some strong years on the 7-8-9 and then Great Recession and then back up, the average is still 9, and that's with the Great Recession in there.
Okay.
And some really good years in 8 and 9.
Now, most of our contingency, or part of it, has come from salary savings.
Right.
In other words, we order an officer, they're not there, we're not paying for it. So,
and also just the growth rates combined with that.
Right, but I mean, we save salary because if we budget for, let's say, 10 officers and we only have 8 out there, we're getting salary savings for those months until they get up to the 10. Mm-hmm. So have you calculated what would happen if we were fully staffed, those expenses, what that does to the ending fund balance? Or do you calculate the full cost?
No. In the projections, those are the full cost.
For all the budgeted positions.
Yeah, but not on year one.
Year one
starting
with
budgeted as they're added. Because that wouldn't make much sense to hire, 10 or 12 police officers right now when we don't have the work for them to do.
Right, but I'm just saying, looking back, salary savings and how that impacts your ending fund balance.
Now it's not from unfilled positions, because now the sheriff's office charges us the minute we request an officer for 12 months. And then they typically, what they've been doing is giving us an officer within about 6 to 9 months from the request. The undersheriff, before he left, made a decision, and it's in the contract, that they were to start charging us the minute we requested an officer. The salary savings that we experience now is because there's 6 steps in a deputy's pay, and I don't know what the range of dollars are, right? Let's say it's 56,000 as an entry level deputy and it's 90,000 for step six. So we budget everybody at a step five, so almost the top of the scale. But we have a lot of ones and twos and threes, and we have some fives and sixes. So we have more ones or twos and threes, and so we take that $20,000 per year salary gap and we get that reconciled back. So there's a lot of savings that comes from just the actual budgeting of what step we're gonna pay them.
Question, I didn't understand that earlier. So you're saying that you pay the sheriff's office for a deputy, but you don't actually get a deputy.
We get them, they're in the hiring phase, they're at the academy, they're in FTAP, the minute they're finished, then they're ours.
We don't, we're paying the sheriff's office, because they don't only start the academy a certain time.
Right.
Right, so there's a hiring process. We're paying for a service that we're not getting.
They're in training.
Okay, we're paying for an officer,
yep.
But they're not patrolling our streets.
Correct.
Fighting
Correct.
Crime.
Correct.
Why are we doing that?
Well, believe me, I fought this really hard, but at the end of the day, the concept is we're paying for that officer and we're guaranteed to get an officer. So if that officer, which they've experienced, either washes out of the academy, FTAP, or works 2 weeks on the job by himself and says, this isn't for me, and leaves, we still get an officer. Where if you were in your own police department, you would be back to the drawing board going out hiring, training, and all that stuff. So
I think it sounds kind of funky, but I understand the sheriff's department, they're going through the hiring process, the training process. They have to pay these people while they're training, hiring, doing the whole thing, and so they need to recoup their costs on that, and that's why they're charging us for it, I would assume.
Correct.
But
even though they're not on our streets fighting crime, as you say, they are being paid, they're being trained for us.
Well, it's not necessarily for us particularly.
Yes, it is. If we request an officer, they're being trained for us.
Excuse me, just a second, please. We're paying to train their employees. They're not our employee. We don't employ any of
them. I think
if
you look at it as FTE, we've asked for an FTE.
I understand.
So they're training an FTE to deploy in the city forever, because we're not going to probably back out of that FTE.
Let me offer something here. This is a detailed contractual relationship that probably needs some work and more discussion. Has no bearing on whether or not we're paying $1.38, $1.56, or $1.25. Let's set that to the side. We'll highlight it as an issue that needs further discussion, but I don't think it impacts ultimately the council's recommendation to refer this to a vote and at what rate, right?
Yeah, this is a future, we're talking about a future contract discussion here, not a rate setting discussion.
But it impacts the total overall expenses that we're paying out in the relationship to the services that we're getting. But I agree, it won't impact necessarily the rate we're gonna set per se, but it bothers me that we're paying for something that we're not getting. We're paying to train an employee that's not ours. And so that raises a lot of fundamental issues for you.
Sure.
Okay, Mr. Campbell, would you continue, please?
Sure. So with every one of these scenarios, you'll see this throughout the presentation, we apply a multi-year approach to staffing with adjustments. So that means if we select scenario one and we are fine with scenario one for a couple of years and year three, the housing slows down, we're at 7%, then we just adjust. Typically what you'll find is when the growth stops, the assessed value stops, the calls for service stops because the population stopped, and there's not a need to hire police officers, so we can scale back. So, and also reverse, if we start with scenario three, strong and our population grows and our assessed value goes up, we have more money, we have more calls for service, we hire more police officers. So you'll see that throughout the presentation, but just to let you know, it's not like we set it and it's set in stone, that's what we're gonna hire, and then, because you don't wanna overhire and you don't wanna underhire. So we constantly adjust each year. Just some historical, this is the 10-year trend for population. I think we all are pretty familiar with that. That 10-year trend reflects about 13.2 calls per day. Population growth estimated out to 2024, it's about 1,000 a year. We took a little look at this because that somewhat kind of dictates what we look at for the future growth, and that's just our boundaries, geo-boundaries, and the urban growth boundary versus the comp plan area you see highlighted in blue. So it was just some information for the committee to look at. Here's kind of the important part where, you know, back when I said police chief has to go and justify adding a police officer, here's the justification. So calls for service. When a citizen calls 911 or non-emergency, that generates a call for service. So remember that. Workload, currently we have 4,823 calls for service annually. That's about 400 a month. That's about 13 a day. You break that down in totality, 13 calls a day. You've got a minimum of 4 to 5 officers working a 24-hour shift, 24-hour period for that day. They work 10-hour shifts. So each officer would average 2 to 3, 4 calls maybe. Some get 0, some get 4. It fluctuates. Self-initiated activities is when an officer is got free time, unassigned time. So that means they're not responding to a call, they're not handling a call, and they're not doing a report on a call. This is their free drive around. They initiate traffic stops. They initiate contacts with people on the street, anything of that nature. That is 63.4 annually, which comes down to about 17 a day. So we're at about 60, between 60 and 65% of self-initiated activity versus assigned time, which is that calls for service. That's a pretty good model for any police department if you've got more than 50% of unassigned patrol time. That attributes to crime control, crime prevention, and that community policing model that everyone looks at. A lot of departments will target at least 30% of unassigned time, and right now we're about 60-65. So that's a good place to be, and that's a place where we want to stay. We don't want that to be less.
How much time would you think that our officers spend doing like the computer work and the paperwork aspect, or is that included in these?
That's
time.
The time's not. You talk about calls for service. You can have everything from you calling in a suspicious person. Mm-hmm. By the time the officer gets there, the person's gone. They clear it out. Call's done. Mm-hmm. Versus if you got something more complex like child abuse, and we'll talk about later about what the contract affords us those types of specialized investigation services. So the officer is spending a lot of time on those types of complex cases. They're spending their time, a little bit of time, referring it to a detective's
division.
But it can vary. Their report system they've been changing. They've changed it 2 times in the last 3 years. If you're proficient at it, it can go quickly. You both, I think,
yep,
the mayor and council, you went on a ride along. Yeah. You can see some of the time that it takes to do reports, but mm-hmm. that's part of that assigned time.
Okay.
So you can, that can vary. And unless we do a very detailed workload analysis, we wouldn't have that.
Oh, Councilor Drake?
Generally, that paperwork is considered minimal time, isn't it? Because they do the writing report, but they're in the car, they're observing traffic, like stop signs or something. So it really is not a large impact on their ability to provide police services. Would that be a fair statement?
Yeah, I mean, it's proficiency. Everything is automated nowadays. All of our tickets, all they have to do is scan the license, it auto-populates the citation, for example. Some of the things that they might spend more time on is writing a special report, crime report on something. But really, all the forms are all on the computer. The minute they hit go, it zaps and pulls it from the computer and pushes it straight into records. So there's not that driving back and forth and dropping off paper and all that kind of stuff. So it's pretty automated. So it's gotten more efficient, and we're getting more efficient as we go along. Any questions about self-initiated versus calls for service?
Nope.
So here's what I was talking about. We have no set target percentage of unobligated patrol time. Now remember, when we talk about assigned time, calls for service versus self-initiated, that doesn't account for them just driving around the car and deterring crime and doing crime prevention, right? That's them actually going on the radio and doing something, counting as self-initiated. So again, without doing a total analysis of what they're doing and probably creating more paperwork for them to keep track of all that. Our target would be more than 50%, and that's where we're at currently, which is good. And that's, again, that's just want to keep reiterating, that's where we want to stay above, ahead of the curve. So we did a heat map for staffing. And one thing that I think the committee all unanimously agreed upon was it's I think, a reasonable request or a reasonable thing for a city of our size to have at least two deputies per shift, 24/7. I think, and Councilor Drake, if you want to jump in here too, I think the committee was pretty unanimous across the board of saying, let's get to that model as fast as we can. So one thing that we all agreed on right away was a minimum staffing standard. Some councils will put a minimum staffing standard per population. It's a little bit different for us because of the contract and because there's other safety contributors that we'll get into. But mainly, it's reasonable to have two on per shift. So this is a little heat map, and what it depicts is how quickly we hire determines how fast that red goes away. So you can see the red there. That means one officer is working from 3 to 7 in the morning on those days, all in the red, and then further down on the Saturday and stuff like that. So for the first year, 1920, which is this budget year, hiring, this is what we're at currently. This is the switch. If we get our two, let's say in 2020 in March, that's what that red goes to. So it's adding two officers to that scenario, which we've already had the request in since February. So that's a good sign. But you can see how difficult it is on the chart. You can see that some of our Wednesdays are loaded up pretty heavy. That's because they work 4/10. And we don't want to split shifts. We want full FTEs, so they're fully invested in the city. So you're going to see that, and you're going to see some days it's loaded pretty heavily. We try to do it right now based on call volume and workload. In 2021, 22, yeah, more officers, and the right's completely gone.
Great.
And we're starting to knock down the blue. And by the end of...
One second.
Oh, sure.
Oh, sorry. Council President Sherman.
So back on this chart here, yeah. So this is, this is after adding four officers.
Correct.
And in your low growth, high cost scenario, I don't remember if that was a proper phrasing, but in scenario three, that was kind of a worst case scenario, and that was adding four people over the course of 5 years.
Right.
So this would be where we would get to, it would look like this if we went with kind of that low end scenario.
Correct.
Okay.
I think if we go through this really quickly, we end up, well, no.
And
I think we took that out, but yeah, go ahead, Travis.
In that scenario you mentioned, it's not like in year one and year two. It's
right, it's over the course of the five.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Where we get to.
Because obviously if they're up front, then it's going to go up.
No. That was my I was just, as I was thinking through this, I was just thinking, okay, so if we go down that path, what happens over the course of 5 years?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And okay.
And I'd like to reiterate what Steve said. The committee was very concerned about the one officer on duty at a time, and they really wanted whatever scenario you did to get the staffing so there was no time period where there was only one officer on duty. That was kind of their thrust, if you will.
Yep, exactly. Well put. And I think that in the situation that we are in now with the ending fund balance above where we're above that 20%, we have the opportunity to do that very quickly to get there. So even if we were in the low, the scenario three, we might be able to accomplish it quicker because we have that ending fund balance that we've already asked for two. So if we get two this next budget year, we might be there.
Council President Sherman.
And just one clarification, these are sworn officers, right? These are not CSOs, correct. They're not our, we've got 3-4 as well that are on.
Yep.
4/10s that are, I guess I mean.
We'll get to it, yeah.
Okay, sorry.
Absolutely, that's okay, that's all right. So I love your enthusiasm.
So this is our sworn officers in a police car out there doing their jobs. Because I mean, I see like our community service officers on the weekends patrolling as well.
Yep.
So okay.
Yep. So that's just a heat map that depicts what that looks like. So you can see in this last year of 25, 26, we've got a minimum staffing of 3. In the last 5 years, we've only added two additional sworn positions.
In the previous 5 years to that, we changed a deputy position to a sergeant, so we paid that gap differential, but we didn't add any new bodies, and we turned the half-time chief into a full-time chief. So.
And Steve, isn't in one of these scenarios that they were talking about, he'd have to add another sergeant, because you're looking at five officers per sergeant kind of as a gauge.
Yeah, throughout those additional officers added, we're looking at potentially adding and making one of those an assigned traffic patrol officer, which is still an officer on the street. So we choose not to go with the motorcycles because motorcycles can't take their own custodies. They can't typically respond to domestic calls or cover units because they're on a bike. So that's why we go with the car, because they're self-sufficient and they can jump in to be a wild car, what they call it, not a district assigned car.
Right.
And then they'll be supervision.
Councilor Goldberg?
I'm just wondering, so a detective is not represented in any of these numbers, correct?
Nope, and I'll show you why. Let's get into that. So public safety contributors. So when you're looking at, some cities use the old national standard, which is a ratio, right, of how many officers per 1,000 you want. This is hard because it's a lot of it depends on the demographics of your city, the crime rate, what types of crimes, how your city's made up. But for us, one of the bigger things to contributors is the fact that we have a contract and we have contract services and we get some services afforded to us because of that contract. So here is what we get via the contract. Now, there are a couple things the county provides to county residents, but there are other things that, let's say SWAT, for example. The sheriff has the ability to say, no, we're not sending SWAT, or we can send SWAT, but we're going to send you a bill. So if Gladstone requested SWAT, they might get a bill along with it. They have mutual aid agreements, so it typically isn't the case unless it's being used a lot. When their SWAT team was down years ago for restructuring, they used Gresham PD SWAT, and they paid for every call out. So they really, sergeants really had to be careful with what they were asking for, because with Gresham SWAT responded, it was a hefty price tag that came along with it. I think Jason brought it up at the beginning of this meeting. If you were around yesterday and you saw the amount of resources for a half a block here, you would say, that's great, that's what our contract service provides us, is those resources. So if you look through here, just take a look at all the different things that were afforded. There are some of these, like you get the reconstruction of the forensics team, craft. Other cities that contribute to that by adding officers to that team get that service, but the cities that don't add officers to that team, they get billed if they want that service. Some of them just don't do it. It's the reconstruction of accidents and crime scenes and things like that. So it's good to have.
Councilor Drake.
Excuse me, some things like the dive unit and all that stuff, they provide that everywhere.
Dive unit is a responsibility of the sheriff because it's usually tied to water, and the water is controlled by the state, and the state pays the sheriff to do that.
Yeah, search and rescue.
Marine unit,
right.
Things like that.
The marine units are supported by people's boat licenses.
Right.
Goes to the Marine Board, and the Marine Board then pays for that.
Ran by the state, yep.
Right.
Investigation detectives, this is the biggest one that we have. So we pay by a percentage of the number of sworn personnel, overall the entire sworn personnel for the sheriff's office. So we pay, our pool amount is a little over $100,000. And with that $100,000, we get all these services. So as we were talking earlier, if it's a crime against a child, we would turn that into the child abuse team, and they would investigate it for us. So it leaves our detective, who primarily does about 80% of his work, is property crimes, because that's what we have primarily here. So I always had a problem with this too, because this is like, we talked about one time paying as we go, a la carte. If we get the service, we pay for it. But because I consider this kind of insurance, $100,000 worth of insurance, we used about darn it, we just paid that insurance, right? But that's the way that we figured out was the best and most transparent way to tap into these detective services.
Councilor Drake.
So the $100,000, you're saying we pay that up front anyway, or?
We pay that, and it's a line item for administrative support services, investigations, and it's part of this.
Okay, thank you.
Also, again, we talked about hiring and stuff, so background investigation, we get the crime analysis that comes through there, the management records unit training, all that stuff. But we had our own police department, we'd have to have our own records unit, things like that. So we use that, and that's based off the number of reports that we turn in, rather than population or ratio percentage of sworn positions.
Councilor Counselor Drake.
And the crime analysis, that includes the mapping analysis?
Very handy. The patrol officers love using that because it's heat mapped as well, so you can see where the crime trends are moving across the city. So you can see where all the car thefts are, burglaries and things like that. Other public safety contributors that you have to consider is the 4 non-sworn FTE that we have. The CSO that is housed at the police department. This is the reason why I want to put them in this, because you can see out of 4,800 calls for service last year, the CSO took 491 of them. Out of 1,500 reports, they did 238 of them. So these are things that are not in progress. They're over the phone. It's if you wake up in the morning and your favorite flower pot's gone, they take a crime report over. There's some fraud things that they take and just they're a world of help. So I think you have to add those in, that position in as a contributor. And then, you know, our community service officers in the field, this is our code enforcement, and they do all those wonderful things and assist the police. And meaning that if you didn't have them, that would be, you know, their marked units, their uniform units, yes or no.
Counselor Drake.
And that question on the CSO that works in the police station, is that person, just out of curiosity, do they work 5 days a week or 4 days a week?
They work 4/10.
4/10, okay. Yep. That's kind of a standard in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's union language too. We've tried to get 5 days a week and they don't like that. Going through this really quick, the school resource officer, if we get to the point where the council decides that we want to employ a school resource officer, we will meet with the school district and, of course, try and work with them on funding and funding that position. But that's later, food for thought. I think everybody has expressed interest in this position before, and know it's a good thing for our schools. So I think that's a later conversation. If that comes in and we negotiate with the school. So we can either do a 9-month or 12-month contract. The sheriff's office will let us just contract that position for 9 months. And I collect this, for example, the school district pays half of the 9 months, so they have the salary of the actual school members.
Counselor Drake.
And I wanted to raise one thing about this. There needs to be some public education around this, because a lot of people that I've talked to, and there was even that lady the other night at our meeting, they think an SRO is there to protect the school, which they, of course they are. But there's so many more things that an SRO does. I mean, I think they're really critical to the school, you know, and it's a lot of prevention things and, you know, the drug stuff and everything. So, I mean, I think people may not understand the value of the SRO or thinking there's gonna be an SRO in every school, and that, of course, is, we can't fund that. But I think at some point we might think working with the sheriff's officer to do some public outreach and explain what they do. And the importance of SROs.
Yeah, they're a great resource, and not to mention calls that happen at schools are fairly time intensive, and police have to respond. So typically, if you don't have an SRO, the patrol officer is responding, so it leaves the city, you know, without a patrol officer. So it's a good position.
And one thing we brought up the other night was with the high school, the SRO will spend a lot of time in the high school. There's a lot of calls out of the school that, out of the high school, that the SRO takes care of. Keeping our patrol officers out on the street.
Yep.
So,
absolutely.
Counselor Amami?
Regarding the school resource officer, so I know you mentioned that if we were to move forward, how soon could we move forward with something like that? That would we need to wait for the levy, assuming it passes, and then start those negotiations, or is that something we could get started on fairly quickly? I personally would like to see it.
I think we have some momentum. We're building good relationships with our school board members. So I don't know how that works, but is there a timeline on when we could start that, or is that?
Not at this point. We don't have a timeline. I think we're focused right now on levy and getting that passed. I think that's where we need to spend all of our energy. And once we get that done, then we can start thinking about strategic placement of positions and what those should be, whether it's an SRO or a new sergeant or exactly what it needs to be. And then the process, like Drake said, to go along with that, mm-hmm. letting people know what that position does. It'll take a little time, and then working with the schools. But right now in the budget, we've scheduled for two personnel, which are police officers, because that's where we have the need, And then probably in the next budget timeframe, we'll start up that conversation of whether or not we want to start focusing on an SRO.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Mr. Campbell.
Okay. So our current police service model, as you know it today, meets our obligations, both for the language of the contract and also what we've promised the citizens is that 24/7 coverage. There are some challenges that come to that, increased overtime. This is, if we have a minimum staffing of two, and let's say there's a random Thursday that one officer calls in sick, the call volume is typically lower on Thursday. They may choose not to replace that officer, and the officer just takes care of the calls for the entire city for a short period of time, right, because they have overlapping shifts. So there could be that. It has shorter response times. So I think there's some good things to having that minimum staffing at two, and like Councilor Drake and I were talking about earlier with the committee, they all agreed unanimously that that was where they wanted to go, was that two minimum shift per shift. Geographic calls, again, priority one and two calls. We haven't seen an increase in response time, so that's good. Again, multi-year approach, we adjust as growth either increases or decreases. We talked about the funding option scenario one. This method would add 12 deputies between that five-year period. It's, again, that high growth, low cost scenario. Number two, you're familiar with, would add 8 deputies overall. By the way, that heat sensing map exercise was used building 7 deputies into the five-year equation. So this would be slightly more than that.
Was it 7 or 8? I think I counted 8. In
there were 7 total, seven? Yeah. We were off by 1. This is the low funding, and then their consideration of if we do drop below the 20% contingency if we were at the option 3. This is what we were talking about earlier, and this doesn't account for the two positions that we're getting now through the larger ending fund balance that we have. But scenario one would get us to our two minimum staffing in year two, and so on and so forth.
Councilor Drake.
Yeah. So the question is, Stephen, to be clear on this, you're using the ending fund balance to hire two immediately, essentially, as soon as possible, and then with the levy, assuming that passes, you're going to hire another two next year. Is that correct?
That's the assumption.
Yeah, that's what we just want to clarify. So it would be 4 in the next 2 years, which would take care of those red zones.
Yes. If we got our two, let's say that we asked for February and September, great. Then we have budgeted in the budget for July 1, we have 2 more. And if we get them by March, then we've got 4 between now and March. And that would get us to the minimum staffing of 2 by next March.
Right, okay.
So that is all predicated on whether or not the Sheriff's Office can deliver those bodies or not.
That's a different issue. But
yeah.
But I think you're talking about March 2021, not March 2020.
2020.
The two positions we have in the budget are for budget fiscal year 19-20.
Yes.
We requested them earlier this year, but we may not get them until March of 2020. So then we'd have to pass another budget in the spring of 2020 to add 2 more.
Correct.
We may not get until the following March, which is March 2021.
Correct, 2021.
Right. Well, I just didn't really think we're going to have 4
more
officers.
No, that's it, because we hired ahead of the budget. We gave authorization to hire
ahead of the budget. Yeah.
One question, Mr. Campbell, as you're talking about. Who's in charge of this one? So. If is the 12-month turnaround, 9 to 12 months, is that typically the maximum that we see in these scenarios? In other words, every time we request a body, it's not always a new hire. So, I mean, are there officers that are coming from somewhere else where we don't have, like, put in the request, 12 months, we pay for 12 months, they hire somebody new, they get it in. I mean, there are situations where we may put a request in and it happens that 3 months they're available. I mean, am I right or wrong in that assumption?
It's almost always a new hire.
It is.
Because they have to backfill their own positions first. So even for promotions, and what they're experiencing now is kind of a rush of people retiring.
Okay.
So they're trying to backfill their own positions first before they give us ours. But
But what we've typically seen is no more than 9 months. We've never seen the 12 months, and the shortest we've seen is 6 months.
Okay.
And I think that's also an item to highlight in potential next contract negotiations is, you know, maybe we need to see a better mix of rookies and experience.
Right.
Because if we continue with this process at the end of the 5 years, we may have all brand new people that have been on the street for less than 5 years.
Which then our expenses would also be lower as well.
Yeah.
So there's, it's a mixed bag.
Yeah, you'll see the more experienced. They really do, I mean, they bid on area that they're going to patrol, but they really do bid on shifts, days off, night, daytime like that. So we're always going to have those step fives and sixes that are coming in, working the premium shifts. But we're going to have the majority, like Mr. Tuck said, the majority now have been the step ones or twos, the new people.
All right, thank you.
Okay, Councilor Drake.
A question. So we're hiring a lot of step one and step twos, which bothers me about the sheriff's office, but how long do they typically stay here? I know there's a contractual obligation. Is it 2 years?
They could stay up to five.
Up
that's
to
the,
five.
That's where contract is for. They can opt out after one.
After one.
Okay.
Just one more quick question and clarification. So what do we typically see, though, Steve, I guess, when I'm kind
of... We see an average of 3 years they stay. Some stay the entire 5 years, and some come in for their 1 year, then they leave.
Okay, so
Because there's new hires coming on, and they've got seniority, so they can bump out into the county. And they're bumping out to places like 82nd Avenue and 99, because it's a younger crew at night, and they want more action.
Councilor Goldberg.
This is a question that's probably down the road, but if we do lose one of our officers that decide to go somewhere else, how quickly does our contract stipulate that they need to fill that position for us?
If it's already a filled position, immediately.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Campbell, continue, please.
So we just talked about the benefits of the minimum staffing. This is the GOB's policing. This is splitting two districts. You spend more time in each of those areas, less response times, things like that. So I think you all know and understand how that works and get more cost advantage to two patrol districts, faster response times. And I just ask this conclusion here is that you think of the public safety holistically. You think of things like our contract and what our contract provides to us. One thing that we didn't talk about too much, but I think you understand the concept. If we have one person on and they need a cover unit, it's not like they're not getting anybody. There's somebody that's pretty close. They have a lot of patrol districts that surround us. So we get supervision when our supervision isn't here. We get deputies coming in taking calls. We get deputies assisting other deputies taking calls here. So that's a huge benefit. So when we look at overall what how many sworn personnel are in the city, it's a lot more than what you see on paper.
Mm-hmm. Councilor Drake.
I saw a Happy Valley deputy on 92nd Avenue going down Johnson Creek.
Possible. Yeah, they could be working an extra shift there. We changed the take-home policy for the cars, so they keep that car with them. So if they go work an extra shift, they stay in their own patrol car. It's good for us because it racks up more miles and we get new cars faster.
Okay.
We're getting a little short on time here, so I'd kind of like to concentrate on the levy more than nice-to-know stuff.
Sure.
Which it is nice to know.
Sure.
So anyway, are you...
Yep, so the conclusion to this was the committee decided that they were most comfortable going with the moderate growth and moderate cost scenario and felt that the $1.38 was sufficient to for the next 5 years for the police levy.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Campbell. What I'd like to do now is ask each individual what they think. Do we need to raise, lower, stay the same, whatever? Justify your position if you want. You don't have to say anything. If you don't want to, just leave it alone or raise it or whatever, and then we can get a consensus. We don't vote, as everybody knows. That will come back to the council for a vote, whatever we decide to do. So is there anyone that would like to start, or do I just start at the end? Councilor Amami, you'd like to start?
Yeah, I'll start.
Right ahead.
So I will respect the decision of the group. I think that the task force that we've assembled is educated and qualified on the subject matter. I know they've looked at it. I think your presentation makes great sense. Thanks for having it so even a guy like me can understand it. After doing my ride-along with Deputy Kronk and talking to many of the officers, reviewing this data, I think that they've made the correct decision. So I support the task force decision of the moderate growth, moderate cost
model, and I, yeah, fully support it. So I think they got it right.
Thank you. Councilor Drake.
Steve, how many of the current committee members in terms of public safety were here at our last levy? I don't think anywhere.
TJ.
TJ and Michelle.
Kevin Bailey.
Is Brian on there, Brock?
Brian's off now.
Brian's gone.
Yeah, I think two, maybe three, if I can think of the last one.
Just, I remember, I don't remember that TJ was there last levy, but I think you're right, you were saying the current chair was there. So the group really hasn't ever been through this levy process before, too many rates or any of that kind of stuff. One of the things I recall that we talked about the last time was we discussed raising the rate like very minimal, like 5 cents, 10 cents, so that over a course of time of these levies, that the rate would go up, that we'd be able to handle, you know, we'd be able to buy more services. And part of the issue was that the $1.38, is so long as everything works, we'll be okay. If something happens, any hiccups occur in the system, you're kind of on the margins and you won't be able to afford what you necessarily want to afford. You're talking about SROs and adding them, depending upon the school district can pay part or whatever, you may not be able to afford them. So it's kind of a marginal issue that we're looking at, marginal coverage. In other words, it kind of adds the patrol officers as our population increases. If we don't population increase, we don't get the SS value, we don't add the officers. So that's kind of something that we had talked about before. But those are things I think we all need to consider overall in this process.
So Councilor Drake, do you have a recommendation? Do we lower, raise, stay the same? That's what we're looking for.
Well, I'd like to see some cost figures, actual cost figures of the cost of the deputies and the revenues projected out so that we can kind of see what is that cost difference and what margins are we really looking at that we can definitely go with. I mean, in other words, if you consider a no-growth scenario at $1.38, what does that buy you? Because you were saying like the officer cost overall is going to say 4.5%. Our assessed value, if it goes up 3%, then what does that do? And of course, obviously, you have the growth in there. That scenario, what would that give you? And it may give you even more money if we look at the average growth rate. So that would help to kind of determine really where we want to be. And then also, we want to add extras like SROs. Do we want to add two or three? What would that cost? And are we able to afford that at the $1.38? Because that's something that, again, we talk to people, citizens, they do like the SROs and they want them in the schools, but we haven't talked to the school to say, are you willing to pay for them? Can you pay a quarter of them, 50%, whatever? And so what would that look like? Because this levy is for 5 years, and if we miss the mark, who knows? Nope, more
there's
of our police
four
officers.
So let me get this straight. You're looking for more information.
Yes.
Is that what you're telling me? Okay.
Yeah.
Who would like to go next? Councilor Golovy.
Well, I believe that the people that we have on our task force, having been one of those people myself, having been given the information, having spent the hours and the time, I think we're doing a disservice to our task force members by saying we don't value your opinion and what you came to unanimously. Is that correct? Unanimously, and I serve on this task force. I know the kind of information that we get. These are our residents, these are our citizens, they're intelligent people. They came to a consensus that the $1.38 would meet the needs of our city. And I think about adding four police officers in a short period of time, two and a half years. I already see our police out on the streets a lot, and I think in our small geographic region, having more police officers, having overlapping times that they're on duty, and I think that $1.38 is okay. Just fine.
Thank you. I want to ask both of you a question because I don't want to speak for you. But so you believe we have enough information to make an informed decision at this time, or do we need more?
I believe we have enough.
Councilor Amon.
I believe we have enough.
Okay. Councilor Sherman. Council President Sherman, your turn to speak.
Thank you. You know, I do respect the idea of, you know, seeing additional information. I do think the task force did a reasonable job. Having been on the Budget Buddy Committee and also, you know, through our budgeting process, looking at it from that side, it seemed we had sufficient resources to get to where we are today. In fact, we had excess resources because we did kind of have a lag in hiring. I think that looking at the three growth scenarios, there's enough flexibility in that that allows us to get to, even in a less than opportune situation, at 138 gets us to a reasonable staffing level over the course of 4 years versus two or three, which I don't see as a you know, horrible outcome. You know, I guess at the same time, I don't see any compelling reason to reduce it, so I can easily take that off the table. So it's a little bit easier decision. And then when I look at keeping the same versus increasing, within the lens of the other things that will be on the November ballot asking for money this year, there are going to be a lot of them. And it would make me very nervous to have an ask for a greater number, even if it's a small greater number, when I do feel like we have a pretty robust structure right now and a good opportunity for future growth and coverage. So I do think the idea of SROs in the future, definitely something we should explore, but I'm comfortable at 138 right now, and I've had sufficient information to make this decision at this point.
Okay, thank you, Council President Sherman. I have been on a police tax force, and I think I was on the last one, as a matter of fact, so I think Councilor Rowley was
on it too. Yeah.
And so I kind of understand how it works, and there's a lot of detailed information going, so I mean, we talked to death when I was in there and did a lot of scenarios. So I personally am comfortable with the recommendation of number two. I too feel as though I have enough information to make an informed decision. I understand Council Drake's position. He'd like to have some more information. I understand that. My personal opinion, I have enough. We have four people here that appear to be okay with staying at 138 and don't need any more information. We have one that would like more information. I would recommend we just move forward without more information, and it sounds like the consensus is to go ahead with the 138. Councilor Drake, would you like to say anything to that?
Yes. I have to agree with Council President Sherman. I think we do have to consider what's on the ballot is a really primary concern, because, and I'm not sure of all the ballot measure or money measures on there. I couldn't remember. I know that Metro's doing the transportation bond.
And Parks. Metro's doing parks.
Parks, I'm
transportation
sorry.
To be 2020.
Right, parks, they're doing parks, and yeah. They're doing it all in 2020. So those are money measures. I'm not sure what the school districts are doing, because they had talked about something at one point.
I haven't heard of anything this
so
round.
Nothing, yeah, that's right, because they just did one.
Courthouse, so, but I haven't seen anything on that.
And you know, the county's considering a couple things, so yeah, you have to take that into consideration, so.
Okay, all right, we're a little short of time here, so it sounds like the consensus is to go move ahead at 138. Am I clear on that? Okay, you have your direction.
Thank you.
Okay, we are adjourned.